J1.
Number 23A.
We go on then with our study of love, and we come to the next idea which is on our list, and it's that of mother. As we have seen, life is symbolized by the Father, and truth is symbolized by the Son. Now we will see here that love is symbolized by the mother. And just in a very short sequence here, we know that the one mind, our mind as life, as Father, is self-existent. It exists out of itself. The one mind, our mind as truth, as Son, is self-expressed. It expresses itself. And now we see that the one mind, our mind as life, as Mother, is self-fulfilled, or fulfills itself. In other words, our mind is also all-embracing or all-inclusive. And in the realm of love, when spiritually understood, being a true mother means to have an all-embracing awareness. It's an all-embracing awareness where we are aware of the fact that we are the whole of principle, appearing in a unique way. Where we are aware of the fact that all others are the whole of principle appearing in a unique way. Therefore, we are aware of the fact that we all are identified with each other and that we all reflect each other infinitely via principle. We have a all-embracing awareness. Mrs. Eddy defines mother this way in Science and Health. She defines mother as God, divine and eternal principle, life, truth, and love. So here we see that the definition of mother includes principle, life, truth, and love. And we say, now what does this mean? Well, we can see that a real spiritual mother, or the real state of spiritual motherhood, cannot be separated from spiritual fatherhood and sonship. That real spiritual motherhood includes within itself spiritual fatherhood and sonship. So if we want to mother an idea, we see that we must first understand its purpose and provide for it and support it. Therefore, we must express fatherhood qualities. And also, we must be conscious of its true form, thus affirming its real identity, therefore expressing sonship qualities. And then, and only then, can we truly mother an idea. In other words, only then can we care for it, protect it, preserve it, cherish it, embrace it, and love it. Now let's just go on then and come to another idea, and it's that of imparts. And we know too that love imparts all good. A real mother, the true spiritual motherhood, imparts all good. Now we say, then, just what does impart mean? Well, in a Latin root meaning of impart means to share with. It means to grant, to bestow, or to make known. So what we have seen in studying life, we have seen this. We see that life brings forth new ideas. In our study of truths, we have seen that these new ideas always appear as specific ideas adapted to a specific situation. And now here in the realm of love, we see that our divine Christ consciousness is all-embracing. In other words, we impart to all others ideas, meaning that these new ideas which appear, we share with all others. We share our new ideas with all others, so therefore our new ideas are the inexhaustible gifts which we are constantly giving to each other. Then we see too here in the realm of love, as we have seen, we always partake of all ideas because we are the whole of principle. We partake of all ideas and we have all ideas to share with each other. And I just really like to see that sequence of life, truth, and love. I think that it's just so beautiful where new ideas appear. These new ideas are always appearing as specific ideas, adapted to a specific situation. And though we always do get new ideas, we then in the realm of love share them with others. Now let us go on and see that of love meets the human need, another idea which is on our list. In the realm of love from a spiritual standpoint, because we all partake of the whole of principle, and because we share all our new ideas with each other, we have then our whole spiritual need being met. But then also we can see that from a human standpoint, because only divine ideas are given birth and unfold, then we must remember that our first degree desires are never fulfilled, that only those human needs are fulfilled which are necessary to bring us into a fuller understanding of our true principal identity. And in this way, love meets the human need. Now we go on to another idea, and we come to that of inexhaustible. And we see here that love is inexhaustible. Well, in the realm of Christianity or Christ activity, we can see then that we are constantly living and using new ideas then. Because we are sharing them with others, we are using them in every sphere of activity. However, even though we share and use these new ideas with each other, these new ideas are never exhaustible. They're never used up. But new ideas are always inexhaustible. New ideas are always available to us at the fullest extent. We can't use them up. We can never exhaust or empty the well of life. And why? Because the laws of life are constantly providing us with these new ideas. Because we know, as we've seen in life, ideas which exist are always restructuring themselves and in bringing forth new ideas. So one just always has superabundance, complete sufficiency of new ideas. Now we go on then to that next idea in love, and that's that of universal. Love is universal. An Annandale dictionary defines universal as meaning all-embracing, all-reaching, total, whole, comprising all the particulars. And universe, we know, means in its Latin root meaning the whole world, whole, entire, or turned into one. So love is universal. In other words, in the realm of love, the one mind, or our mind, is universal. It's all-embracing. It's all-inclusive. It includes the whole universe. And because we are the one principle mind, we naturally then can say we are include the whole universe in our thinking, and also we are universally related to each other and to the whole of spiritual creation. We can say that we are universal citizens or world citizens. Therefore, our all-embracing consciousness, our all-embracing universal consciousness in the realm of love does not have any sense of separation or exclusion or self-interest or isolationism or partisanship. There's just no favorites to our all-embracing universal consciousness. And we can see then, and in this realm of love, this universal all-embracing awareness is omnipresent. It's always with us. One can just feel that as we get here into this realm of love, how our whole consciousness just goes out and embraces then the whole universe. Now we go on then to the idea of perfection. Perfect means in the dictionary finished or complete or having all the that is requisite to its natural nature. Perfect then means lacking nothing essential to the whole. It means being in a state of highest excellence without any defect. Being perfect means conforming completely to an absolute or very high standard of excellence. So love is. And we know then that love is a realm, and it's the realm of perfection. And Mrs. Eddy will say in Science and Health that God is love. More than this we cannot ask. Higher we cannot look. Farther we cannot go. So you see, the outcome of our Christ consciousness is the realm of perfection. In this realm, we are perfect. More than this, we cannot ask. How can we ask for more than perfection? Completeness, wholeness, highest excellence. You see, higher than being perfect, we cannot look. Farther, we cannot go. We are complete and we are whole. We have all qualities. We are in a state of complete excellence. Now, this state of being in the highest excellence is not the meaning of excellence where we try to excel or outdo each other, where we try to be superior to everyone else. No, this state of high excellence in the realm of love is the meaning of excellence where it's a state of possessing all good qualities. Now, looking at this state of perfection in the realm of love, we can see it from a very practical point of view. And we should see it as applying to our everyday life. And what we see is that each day we must see everybody and every experience in the light of perfection, not in the light of astrology or not in the light of imperfection and so forth. This is what Mrs. Eddy says, Jesus beheld in science the perfect man who appeared to him where sinning mortal man appears to mortals. Jesus didn't budge from the standpoint of love. He understood at all times that man is perfect. So we can say, let us not budge from that realm of love. We have worked hard to get to this standpoint of love. Each one of us have spent many hours now together going from mind to spirit to soul to principle to life to truth to finally enter the realm of love. Let's not budge from this standpoint. Let's always at all times understand that all men are perfect and that we are perfect and that just false beliefs about ourselves and others come only as suggestions. All error or mortal mind is just hypnotic suggestion, and it's up to us whether we let it in or not. Well, we have made our journey to see that we're not going to let in any error or any false suggestions. We're not going to budge now from our realm of perfection. And so just turn down any suggestions that come to say we're imperfect or others are perfect. Just don't let these suggestions penetrate our sphere now of scientific understanding. But yet from a practical standpoint, from a human standpoint, this does not mean that we close our eyes or ears to error or to evil ways, and that we should close our eyes to what is going around us, or that we should allow those around us to continue on with false conduct. Because as we have already seen in the study of truth and error, that error left alone just grows and becomes harder to handle. No, we know that our Christ consciousness, even though it scientifically understands that everyone is perfect, our Christ consciousness at the same time demands that all error be analyzed, uncovered, and annihilated. And we can say, why? Well, it's just so that everybody in every circumstance is pure and that everybody is actually living up then to their pure state of perfection. And I think often that it's perhaps harder and more difficult for those of us who have been raised a Christian Scientist and who have been taught to view everybody in the light of perfection, to actually go into a false situation and demand with scientific authority that this situation be stopped. Because often Christian Scientists or Christians or whatever think that they should always be kind and sweet. Well, one says, yes, It's right to be kind and sweet in face of perfection. But is it kind, nice to be kind and sweet in the face of error? And it's no. Our scientific understanding demands us to be stern and strong. Nowhere have I read that the Christ truth is kind and icky sweet to err. But everywhere I have read where the Christ truth analyzes, uncovers, and annihilates error. And as we have seen, Jesus didn't go into the temple and be kind and icky sweet to the money changers. He overturned the money tables. So, let's not be plagued by a false sense of Christianity, but let's know the real meaning of Christianity or Christianity, which is the Christ doing or the Christ consciousness, which always first sees everybody in the light of perfection. But then, simultaneously, this Christ understanding overturns the money tables and demands all error to be annihilated. Therefore, always, under all circumstances, our Christ consciousness is demanding perfection. We turn now to our illustrative material on the laws of love. And just as we have then the laws of life and the laws of truth, we can now go over and see just what are the laws which characterize love or the realm of love. And we see that the first law is the law of love itself. Now what this means is that there is just love itself. There is just the one love. There is just the one realm of perfection or the one realm of wholeness. As we know, there are not two realms. There is just, in reality, the one realm of perfection, which is either misunderstood or understood. And in the realm of perfection or in the realm of wholeness, every detail expresses the whole in an individual way. So it's actually a realm of all-inclusiveness where there is no outside and no exclusion. So we characterize it by just saying it's the realm of love itself. Now we see that the realm of love itself is the source of the law of perfection, the next law. Mrs. Eddy says about the realm of love that it is neither behind the point of perfection nor advancing towards perfection. It is at this point. So this whole realm of love then is the source of the law of protection. The law of protection is not a law which is to demonstrate how we become perfect, but the law of perfection is at the point of perfection and demonstrates from perfection all forms of perfection. Therefore, this is a law which preserves perfection, preserves highest excellence. Then we go on and we look at this law of completeness. And here we see too that this realm of love is a source of the law of completeness. Because the realm of love is at the point of perfection and completeness, then we have the law of completeness, which is to preserve that completeness and to preserve that wholeness. Therefore, it is not the office of the law of completeness to make us complete and perfect. It's not the office of the law of completeness to have a beginning and a developing, which then somehow reaches a perfect conclusion. This law is just to preserve that which is. That which is completeness. Now we go on and we look at the law of integration. And again, the realm of love is the source of the law of integration. Because the realm of love is the realm of the all in all. It's the realm of integrated being. Therefore, nothing is separated, excluded, or isolated, or divided up into mere parts of the whole. But it's a whole realm of the all being embraced within the all. Therefore, the law of integration has its office to preserve integration. Therefore, it is not the office of the law of integration to integrate everything. As we go on to the law of transparency, it's the same. We see that the realm of love is the source of the law of transparency. And the meaning that the realm of love is a realm of transparency, where the whole shines through all details, where everything is crystal clear, where there is no opaqueness, no friction, no incoherence or contradictions. Therefore, again, it's the law, office of the law of transparency to preserve transparency. Again, it's not the office of the law of transparency to make everything transparent. One can say then that the law of transparency preserves a consciousness which only knows love, and only such a consciousness is transparent. Then we have the law of planning. The realm of love, because it's the realm of perfection and perfect plan, is the source then for the law of planning. And it's the office of the law of planning to present perfection in ever new variations of perfection. In other words, it's to take perfection which already exists and to restructure that perfection and to bring out new and other forms of that perfection which already exists. Therefore, it is not the office of the law of planning to plan how to reach perfection. Now, as we have seen, we have the laws of life, and we've had the laws of truth. Now, these laws do not operate aimlessly, but they are motivated and directed right from the very beginning by the teleological laws of love. Therefore, right from the beginning, the laws of life and truth are motivated and directed by one plan and one goal. And then what is that plan? Well, we've just seen to present perfections in an ever new ways. Now, these laws of love are, of course, multidimensional laws, and they just show the translatability of law. That law of love itself, which is just the one love, or just the one realm of perfection, or completeness, or wholeness, or integration and transparency, that whole law is translated as the law of perfection, the law of completeness, the law of integration, the law of transparency and planning, where we have seen that these laws just preserve perfection and so forth, and they preserve perfection and completeness in all aspects of life. Now, these laws are translated as the law of universal reflection. And it's the office of this law to preserve perfection in all aspects of life through the universal reflection of all ideas. Now, this law of universal reflection has quite a lot of practical application. But what we know then is because we are the whole principal mind appearing in an individual way, and because we know that all others are the whole principal mind appearing in an individual way, then we must identify with each other and we must reflect each other infinitely. And we say, well, then how do we reflect each other infinitely? We do this by the law of universal reflection. It's where I give and claim and accept that I am the one principal mind. And then I give and claim and accept that all others are the one principal mind. And then all others give and claim and accept that they are the one principal mind. And then all others also give and claim and accept that I am the one principal mind. And we have a beautiful reflection going on. So turn to your illustrative material entitled The Family Law. Now, this illustrates the law of universal reflection, or the universal reflection of all ideas, as a fatherhood, as sonship, as motherhood of ideas. And with the fatherhood of ideas, we see that then ideas provides and maintains and gives and supports and projects and feeds what it does it to itself, to every other idea, then every other idea to itself, and every other idea to every other idea. So we say then we have the fatherhood of ideas, and it provides and maintains and gives. Well, what does it give? What does an idea give to another idea? Well, we can say that it gives all ideas. It gives the fullness of ideas. It gives the person their true identity. What more can we do or give to somebody than to acknowledge their true identity? I think that's the greatest gift we could ever do for somebody, is to see them perfect. And this is the law which enables us to do that. So I could say this. I can go through this law and say that I give to myself all ideas. Therefore, I do not rob myself of ideas by saying that I lack this or I lack that or I don't have time to do this or that, you see. I actually give to myself all ideas in all time. And not only that, but I give to every other idea all ideas. Therefore, I do not criticize any other idea or rob them of their fullness of idea. And then every other idea gives to itself all ideas. And every other idea doesn't rob itself of ideas. And every other idea doesn't criticize itself. And then every other idea gives to me and every other idea the fullness of ideas. And every other idea doesn't rob me or others of ideas. Do you see that in this takes care of every relationship and reflection that there can be? And it also handles a false sense of Christianity, where one feels that I must always give to others and never give to myself, because one sees that in this law that others are giving to themselves also, you see, and they are also giving to me. And so therefore I mustn't always just give to others, but I must see that they give to me and I also give to myself. And it states the true relationship that we must have with other people. We can just go on with this law and state it very simply too when we go through the sonship of ideas. And you just say the same thing. What does a son do? But it affirms and claims all ideas for itself. So I just say that I claim for myself all ideas. I claim for every other idea all ideas. And every other idea claims for himself all ideas. And every other idea claims for me. And every other idea all ideas. And the same with motherhood. You see, a motherhood of ideas protects and cherishes and preserves and embraces and accepts. So I not only give all ideas to someone, and I not only claim those ideas, but I also accept them. And I accept them for myself, you see, all ideas. I accept these ideas for everyone else. Everyone else accepts those ideas for themselves. And they also accept those ideas for me. So it's a trinity here of saying, of giving, claiming, and accepting. And if one goes through in their quiet time through this family law, it really works. I know I've done it myself quite often over the past year, and just sit down very quietly and just will go through this law, and it just sets your consciousness at ease with yourself and others. It's really quite simple, yet its implications are profound. We go on then with the idea of fulfillment as an idea which characterizes love. And the fact is that all creative activity leads to fulfillment. In other words, all new ideas which appear as specific ideas to a specific situation must fulfill themselves. Because as we have seen, those laws of life and truth are not operating aimlessly, but right from the beginning, right from the very beginning, they are motivated and directed by the laws of love. Therefore, they are motivated and directed towards one plan, a fulfillment. And it's not actually that we have to wait for the future to bring us perfect fulfillment. No, this actually then would be shutting out those laws of love. But in reality, we are at every moment, right from the beginning, in our ideal form, perfect, complete, and fulfilled. We are, then, we can say, at every moment, the one principal mind, individualized and adapted to a specific situation. Therefore, we experience, right from the very beginning and at all times, perfect fulfillment and completion. Therefore, we are always answering by execution our purpose within the plan of love.